Marshall, thank you for having this conversation and talking with me and joining us here about 5G. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, let's see. While I was at high school, I was a radio amateur, and I used to use radio waves to talk to all my friends. I used microwaves back then. In 1965, I set an Australian record, because I was originally Australian before I migrated here. I set an Australian long distance record for the 576 megahertz band, which is exactly where we're talking about T-Mobile here, of 130 miles to send a voice transmission over that. I used to monitor the satellites. I was only 10 years old when Sputnik went up, but I still heard the Sputnik beeps on the shortwave radio. And then by the time the first AMSLET went up in 1964-65, I had a whole lot of antennas in my backyard listening to the satellites and trying to understand what it was all about, and decoding the telemetry and that sort of thing. So I don't have a fear of satellites, because I know them. Mm-hmm. and I know the technology. I lectured at a university until 1978, I transferred to the University of Western Australia and started doing clinical research. I studied for my PhD, which was in diabetes, trying to mathematically figure out what was the cause and effect of diabetes on an individual. And then in 82, 37 years ago, I came to the States, and I've been working here in California ever since on a variety of things. We were working with Hamamatsu Photonics on the very early scanners, the SPECT PET scanners that they were developing in Japan, a number of other scientific things. And then in about 2001, I started to work seriously on the molecular research. And we made a breakthrough on understanding and treating chronic disease. We have about a dozen peer-reviewed papers on that at this point. So that's where we are now. It's sort of all coming together.
Would you consider yourself more of a doctor or a technological engineer or a scientist?
I'm all of those. So I'm interested in the what to do, which is the technological engineering bit. I'm focused on the science, because there's so much non-science out there, both in medicine and in 5G. The medicine, I've given speeches at many, many conferences around the world. You can find them on my YouTube channel. YouTube.com/Dr. Trevor Marshall. So I'm interested in them all. I'm having a great time.
How do you see 5G? What's the nature of it? What's actually happening here? What's true and what's myth? Help us to really crystallize our understanding of 5G.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's idea of 5G is a little bit different. And it doesn't matter whether we're the carriers or consumers. We really don't know exactly what people are saying when they're talking to us about 5G. I see 5G as a Trojan horse. When we go back a couple of years, Google was doing some work with their high-flying balloons, the Google Loon project. And the first of the satellite constellations that are going up to bring communications to the whole of the planet was being mooted. And I think that the carriers that are providing our cell phone services now realize the threat that these new methods of delivery offered. One of the biggest threats is that they offer a lot more bandwidth, because they use the higher frequencies, the millimeter waves, to deliver signal rather than the microwaves that are currently in use. And therefore, there's a lot more information that can be put on a carrier. The pulse trains that are used to modulate data onto a carrier can be a lot faster, a lot more data can go across, and way beyond the limit of what the terrestrial telcos can manage with their current 4G build out. And they wanted to be part of this whole thing. They wanted to make sure they'd secured some spectrum in the millimeter wave band. And the lobbyists started working on the politicians and persuaded the politicians that it wasn't good enough just for the satellites, who have a line of sight to us. In microwave transmission, it's very important that you can see the other end of whom you're transmitting to, because anything in the way will attenuate the signal, make it get weaker. So the satellites can use these very high frequencies because they have a line of sight between the satellite 350 miles up and the Earth. Whereas the cell tower that's sitting half a mile or a mile away from you at the moment may not have that line of sight. It has houses in the way, it may have trees, and it may even have undulating ground. So they decided that they'd make sure at least that they had some of this bandwidth preserved. And they went to the FCC. The FCC has run the auctions, as you know, for the 27, 24, and 37 gigahertz bands, and is about to run them for 49 and possibly higher. But they've secured themselves some bandwidth at a very low price compared with what they paid for their microwave bandwidth. The next problem they had is the cost of the towers. It costs quite a lot. $25,000 a month is not unheard of for a telco to put a tower on private property or industrial property in one of our smaller cities. I'm not talking about the bigger cities, which are a special case, but the smaller cities, the metropolis. And they really can't build out the metropolis heavily enough when they're having to pay that amount for the tower rental. So they came up with this idea, well, why don't we put all of our antennas on the street? Then we can put them on street lights and we can force the local councils to give us those street lights for next to nothing. And the rental that they're paying on those street lights is next to nothing. Several hundred dollars a month is fairly typical. So it's a huge change, which allows them to build out essentially free of charge. So the next thing they decided to do was to do it quickly, because Elon Musk, with his first batch of satellites, which is already up there, is threatening to go online as early as the end of 2019 for the first ring of satellites and end of 2020 for the next, for the full ring of satellites. The full coverage of the United States and indeed the world, potentially. And then Amazon also is putting some satellites up, and Google's still got its balloons, which are active in some areas of the globe at this point. So the telcos, if they're going to cling on to their business model that they've used for so long, they're going to have to compete with these new sources of internet, because the satellites will be faster. In fact, Elon Musk is claiming that his satellites will be faster than fiber laid on the ground, because the speed of light in fiber slows by about 50% as it travels through the fiber. And that gives him the up and down time paths, which he loses when he's going up to a satellite. So it's very interesting the way things are shaping up. But in terms of 5G, what is 5G? Well, it's an evolution. What happened was the telcos went to the politicians and with their lobbyists said, look, you know, we need to increase the amount of data going to people, increase the speed of data. And because this Internet of Things is being built out, we need to be able to support a lot more consumers than we currently have, because their tea kettles are going to be, coffee kettles are going to be sending back signals directly to some central server, and they need to be connected just like people do with their cell phones.
Right, smart home, smart meters.
Smart home, smart meters. Yep. And then they thought, oh, wait, what about smart cars? Oh, there's a lot of consumers there. So let's start talking about smart cars as well. And 5G sort of evolved. I've watched it over the last couple of years. And what we have now is a mishmash. Everybody is rushing to market. They haven't been able to make it pay yet, incidentally, because people are not prepared to pay extra for the service. And most homes are serviced pretty well now by cable and fiber anyway. So there's nothing to stop a person getting a quote-unquote 5G router to put in the corner of their home connected to the fiber and get the 5G speeds right now before any build-out occurs.
Now, I wanted to just jump in there and ask you, what does it mean when we look on our, those that have Wi-Fi turned on in our house, we look on our router, it says 2.4G and then 5G. What does that mean?
That's a different 5G.
Yes.
That means 5 gigahertz. That's a Wi-Fi standard. So it's a 2.4 gigahertz / 5 gigahertz, 802.11ab, is what it's called technically.
Okay, so that does not mean that 5G is in your home. I just want to clarify that because it seems like some people are in, under that impression.
Yeah, no, it doesn't mean 5G is in your home. Although some telcos, and T-Mobile is one that sticks in my mind, are advertising they will give you a 5G router to put in your home if you're a subscriber. And they would prefer that you put it near the windows so that all your neighbors can get it as well. There's all these subtle build-outs that are going on to try and grab for the market that the land-based telcos see slipping away from themselves at this point in time. I mean, why is it slipping away? Nobody thought that Musk could put up 60 satellites on one rocket and that they would nearly all be functional. It was just unbelievable. And then for the rockets, for the satellites to be positionable, to actually have motive power in them so that they can position them, it's just a step in technology nobody expected.
Now, what's the difference in the level of risk compared to, you know, the terrestrial 5G, the 4G being evolved into 5G on the ground, and the 5G satellites? What's the truth as we kind of step into, you know, clearing out some of the myths and really crystallizing a clear understanding?
Okay, so at the moment, most of us have got a cell tower, say half a mile away on average, let's say 3,000 feet away, just over half a mile on average. And that tower may be anything from 40 feet to several hundred feet high. And the transmitter at the top will be putting out power, effective radiated power, somewhere around 1,000 watts, give or take a bit. And that means that people in the vicinity of the tower are not going to immediately fry like eggs. And you know, so about 1,000 watts is a typical power from a tower. So then let's now take the situation of what we're faced with, which is the government mandating that towers be built at the end of your driveway, every second driveway. Then you're talking about a distance of, let's say, 30 feet from a house. So you've got 3,000 to 30. So the signal now is that much closer, 100 times closer. But the way that signal goes out is it goes out as a sphere, goes out as a cone. So it drops off in strength as the radius squared rather than the radius, as a distance squared. So that 100 times distance means 10,000 times in relative signal strength between the signal in your home from the tower half a mile away and the signal in your home from a tower at the end of your driveway. And 10,000 times is a fairly significant number. Nobody really knows how much power are going into the small cells yet because they're still starting to deploy them. But my guess is it's going to be somewhere around 10 watts or about 100 times less. But that's still going to be pushing 100 times the current level of exposure of radiation into people's houses. And yet people are being made sick right now by 4G from the towers. And there are plenty of studies to show that even the earlier generations, 2G and 3G, cause increased sickness within about 300 yards of a tower, 300 meters of a tower. It's measurable with studies. So everybody is going to be now in that region where they're subject to risk for sickness due to radiation.
How does that compare to satellites?
Well, satellites are 350 miles away. And I have actually computed all the numbers, but I can't pull them out of my head in terms of how many feet 350 miles is. But it's what it means is that by the time the signal gets to the surface of the ground, it is very weak, just strong enough for a cell phone. Normally with 4G, the signal around your house is, I'll take that number again, 10,000 times greater than it needs to give you a good cell phone signal. The signal strengths tend to be logarithmic, and 10,000 is 40 dB, and it's, you know, it's the difference between what a cell phone comes up as 5 bars and the typical strength in a suburban environment these days. So that when the signal from satellites get to the ground, it's just enough to give 5 bars on a cell phone with a properly designed antenna outdoors. Now, how much attenuation there'll be in roofing materials and things, we don't know, and that has to be seen. But basically, outdoors is a known quantity. It can be calculated. The signal strength is very low. It still has an effect on biology, because biology turns out to be exquisitely sensitive to electromagnetic radiation. But the effect is much, much less than we currently have with 4G.
So it still has also an effect on total surveillance planetary-wide, right? I mean, that's one of the greater concerns, perhaps, of the satellites, yeah?
Yeah, but it does, but it doesn't allow close location. The cell phone towers at the end of your driveway allow your telco to know within about 1 yard, within 3 feet, where your phone is in your house. So they can see when you get up of a morning and your phone moves from the bedroom to the shower, for example, and then they can see when it moves to the kitchen. A complete pattern of your daily behavior can be logged at that level of precision. The satellites can't get any locational precision at all, really. They can get some GPS signals from the phones, perhaps, if the GPS is getting into the home. But really, although the satellites will see every signal on the planet, they can't locate those signals accurately.
Not accurately, not down to the several, you know, feet or perhaps even inches that small cell towers throughout your neighborhood could. Okay.
Right.
Now, what about with the satellites? Doesn't your phone also need to communicate back to the satellites? So wouldn't your phone output have to be higher?
Yes, it does, but it can be directed up away from the head. The designs that I've seen from Sony and some of the other people who've actually been working on 5G phones, Samsung just started, but Sony's been doing it for a while, and basically the phone's a little bit longer, so it sticks above the head, and then there's a directional antenna at its top, which points electrically, doesn't change physically, but it still changes the sensitivity electrically at the satellite.
Now, what happens if you quickly turn the phone sideways, or if you're, you know, you're using it sideways, or any number of things could potentially happen there?
Yeah, it's a different ball game altogether. You're not going to get the signal. Small amounts of movement it can compensate for, but not large.
I'm talking in terms of radiation, though. If it's pointing upwards, if it's really emitting upwards, and what happens if, say, you put your hand in front of it, or you turn your phone sideways, or anything like that?
Well, it like all. Like all millimeter wave, the true 5G shorter wave signals, it will be attenuated almost completely by a hand or a human body or some other water-based medium. Anything that's got water in it will absorb almost all the signal. So you know, people are the obvious thing that have water in them. And if you get between your phone and a 5G tower, then you've lost the 5G signal. It's just gone.
So what frequencies are comprised in 5G? Is it all millimeter wave? What are we talking about here?
No. You see, they've taken their 4G frequency bands and repurposed them to send out the 5G pulsating signals and called it 5G. But the frequencies are still the same. 6, 7, 8, 900 megahertz is the key bands because that penetrates inside houses and inside buildings. And that is the way that the ground-based telcos have been marketing their wear. Instead of marketing it as when you get home, then you'll, of course, connect to your local router, which is sitting inside your home. They say, no, we'll put out a powerful enough signal to get through your walls. And that's why the signal's some 10,000 times larger than it needs to be inside the average home. Because many homes are fairly well shielded, and they need a larger power. And that's how they build out their network.
So what happens with, for example, kids playing in the front yard?
They're being exposed to the signal that's coming in from the tower, which is, as I said, going to be 10,000 to 100,000 times greater with the small cells built out on the street, because the kids are going to be 20 feet, 30 feet away from the small cells, very close indeed.
And what does the science say about that level of risk?
The science says that the level of risk right now is too great. And you can see it. There are people just in our locality here, people giving testimony at the local city council, 50 or so people that I've seen there in the last few months that are desperately ill. And their physicians just can't help them. There's no drug that will offset the sickness. It's really debilitating for those people who are sensitive to the current levels. And as this intensity goes up, as the radiation goes up, more and more people will start to be affected by that radiation. Some people are not going to be affected at all. Most people are going to be, no, I should say most. There was a study out a month ago which said that about 30% of the population in the United Kingdom is mildly electrohypersensitive. So they're going to be getting problems in about 10 years from the chronic diseases that we've been working with as well. And those chronic diseases develop slowly, and at some point they'll become overwhelming and be diagnosed. But it's about 10 to 20 years out is when they typically appear. And I'm talking about the autoimmune diseases, arthritis, cognitive dysfunction, that's myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, that sort of idiopathic or unknown chronic disease condition. And then some will be immediately affected. Some will only be affected when they get near to towers and they feel their skin start to crawl, which is very commonly happening now with the smaller cells, because people are getting much closer to them. And they're suddenly finding, oh, wait a minute, I can feel something. I feel like my skin is crawling. And other people have different symptoms, of course, but there is an instantaneous effect. Then there is a longer term effect on your immune system, knocking your immune system down, therefore making you susceptible to chronic disease in the 10 to 20 year time frame. And then there are some people who may not have any impact at all, just like with smoking. I'll just use smoking as the example there. Not everybody dies of lung cancer.
So you're saying that all this is science-based. There's
yes.
How many studies would you say show an effect from the kind of radiation we're talking about with 5G?
None. And the reason I say that is because we've never tested pulse. Nobody has ever tested pulsed 5G signals for biological activity. They haven't even tested pulsed 4G signals for biological activity. But with 4G, we can point to the people who are being made ill and their physicians, their doctors that can't help them. So we have some data on 4G. We have none on 5G yet because it's not deployed. It's going to be worse. How much worse? Hard to tell.
People are basically guinea pigs, being treated by guinea pigs by the wireless industry that we know has co-opted the government.
Yes, we're all subjects, involuntary subjects in a huge experiment.
Okay, now you mentioned there's no 5G studies. Industry admitted that they're not doing any studies. They admitted that in a federal Senate hearing in early 2019. Now, how many studies are there just in wireless radio frequency electromagnetic radiation in general that indicate harm for the levels around, you know, approximately the levels that we're talking about of exposure?
Countless studies, tens of thousands of studies, going right back to the First World War, and even before that, the early pioneers, Hertz, for example, died of immune disease. Marconi died of a cardiomyopathy, a heart, unknown heart disease condition. So, I mean, it goes right back. In the First World War, when the ships were being fitted out with the first ship-to-shore transmissions, people were becoming ill from that. And then in the Second World War with radar, it was very much worse. Radio operators were known to have an incidence of sickness, a high incidence of sickness. And then as TV and FM radio stations were built out and AM radio stations became more powerful, then we also see that there's data coming in from them on sickness as well. Now, most of the studies have been done in a lab to get controlled conditions, and therefore they don't use pulsed waveforms. There are quite a few that have tried to simulate 2G, and very few that have tried to simulate 3G with pulsed waveforms. But, you know, basically, you can't do a study unless you do a study. And as you say, the industry is not doing studies on 5G. They never did it on 4G. They almost got away with 4G. If you think about it, step back and think about it, and what we're talking about now should have been talked about when 4G was brought in, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And so in some ways this 5G is an Achilles heel that will come back, because now we're all aware that there is something going on there, that not all of us are going to be affected immediately by it, and that there's really very little knowledge of what that effect is going to be in the long term.
So people have basically been kept in the dark about this whole story because it hasn't been talked about in mainstream. Governments are telling us it's safe. How can it be that
The California Department of Health estimated back in 2002 that 3% of the California population was being affected by electromagnetic transmissions.
Okay, but we're not hearing about even that, right?
No, because it was suppressed.
Okay.
Berkeley University had to sue, Prof. Moskowitz at Berkeley, had to sue the state to get them to release the documents that they'd prepared 10 years ago, telling people to be very careful with how they used their cell phones. And even then, the industry fought it through all the courts that, no, it's perfectly reasonable for a retailer to put up a sign saying, this might harm your health. The industry wouldn't allow that. And they used every means at their disposal to slow down the dissemination of knowledge to the consumer.
Does this, let's just say, 5G agenda have what you might say is an Achilles heel?
Yeah, people are talking about potential risk now, and they weren't before. Very widely talking. You and I are talking, but they're also talking in the local newspapers. And that's a big deal, very big deal.
Okay, now just one of the other myths, help us to understand, what does it mean when you see 5G on your phone now?
Depends on your phone.
Okay.
There's software in your phone that decides what it's going to put on your screen. And if you're a T-Mobile customer, then when it sees signals in the 600 megahertz range, which is a very well-known frequency range, that it can demodulate with the algorithms for 5G, then it'll put 5G on the front panel. And that'll be a bit faster than 4G, but not 100 times, maybe 5 times typically faster.
So not necessarily does it mean that it's emitting micro or millimeter wave frequencies, like super high,
exactly.
24 gigahertz and up.
Exactly.
Not necessarily does 5G on your phone mean that. Okay.
No, it doesn't. 5G primarily is a method of transmitting the data on the signal, the method of modulating the signal, the amount of spread spectrum there is from the data that's on the signal.
What are the carrier's plans, though, and the satellite carrier's plans for millimeter wave frequencies that you know of?
Sony has some technology which will be released. I'm sure they'll probably license it to Apple, I would suspect. Apple has been doing some work on millimeter waves, and Samsung now has formed a new division to deal with millimeter waves and satellite communication. But what we're seeing right now is really 4G plus. If this Trojan horse called 5G hadn't been so effective in persuading the politicians to make it easier for towers to be put up through our residential areas, then they'd be talking about 4G plus rather than 5G.
So the biggest concern that you have about 5G, or like you're saying, 4G plus, is the fact that instead of far, you know, cell towers being located a long distance away, in most cases, they're, what, every 2 to 5, 6, 7 homes, right?
250 feet every 2 to 3 homes, typically. 250 feet is what the FCC put into its regulations, which is crazy because Verizon says that it can send 2,000 feet, and they're planning for 2,000 feet. But the regulations have already been written that the towers can be put in every 250 feet. So that means when kids are playing in the roadway, then they'll not only be, people walking down the footpath, they'll not only be getting signals from towers near them, but also very, very strong signals from towers a little bit further away. And remember, 300 yards is the level at which health effects have been reliably detected by a number of studies, 3-4 big studies.
So 300 yards is a distance at which we know that there are serious health effects, and
yes.
Now it could be 20 to 30 feet
yes.
in front of your house, and your kids could be playing in front of your house,
yes.
highly susceptible to this vastly increased amount of exposure.
Well, as I said, if you take a 30-foot distance to the small cell and compare that with a 3,000-foot distance to the tower half a mile away, which we have now, that's 10,000 times higher radiation level the kids are going to be subjected to.
Now, 10,000 times because, like you say,
it's 100 times, 100 times distance squared.
The law of inverse square
yeah.
in terms of radiation exposure. Okay,
yeah.
Now, okay, so Trevor, assuming that we and the summit and everyone else bringing awareness can get the word out in a significant enough way, do you see, is this a solvable problem? Are there solutions? Are there solutions being piloted? How can we solve this problem?
Every one of our attendees at this seminar needs to go to their local city council and find out what the city council's attitude is to allowing these small cells to be built in the residential areas. Many cities, including my own, have given written a blank check for the telcos. They can put them anywhere. That is just disastrous. Some cities, particularly up in Marin County in Northern California, have said no, not at all. You're not going to put any towers, any small cells in a residential area. Because that's how it's always been. For 37 years, in our city, it's been no build out in the residential area, and suddenly they're doing it. Instantly doing it overnight with hundreds of towers being erected at a time.
What are your thoughts on the wired solutions, fiber optic to the home and to the business, as Timothy Sheckley is bringing forward?
Oh, that's the best way is wired. I have two connections here. I have a fiber to the house, which was put in by Verizon, and I've got a cable. Coaxial cable mode, which used to bring TV but now brings high-speed internet, and it's as fast as you could want, and much more effective than trying to do.
Marshall, thank you for having this conversation.
The towers can be put in every 250 feet. So that means when kids are playing in the area, because that's how it's always been. For 37 years in our city, it's been no build out in the residential area, and suddenly they're doing it. Instantly doing it overnight with hundreds of towers being erected at a time.
What are your thoughts on the wired solutions, fiber optic to the home and to the business, as Timothy Sheckley is bringing forward?
Oh, that's the best way is wired. I have two connections here. I have a fiber to the house, which was put in by Verizon, and I've got coaxial cable mode, which used to bring TV but now brings high-speed internet, and it's as fast as you could want, and much more effective than trying to do it with wireless.
And do you see opportunity for city councils and local governments to take control of their infrastructure and follow the example of these pioneer cities and provide wired right to the building, right to the home, and as an alternative to 5G?
Oh absolutely. The forward-looking cities such as ours used to be have already done that. And deployed fiber, which is the best. But, you know, cable is pretty good too. And repurposing the cable TV repeaters and telcos to handle internet is not a huge task.
Yeah. If we don't take action on this, let's say, just talking about humanity as a whole, if we don't take action on this, how big of a problem do you expect this to cause?
Professor Martin Paul said that this is a civilization-ending event. We know that people are sterilized by holding their cell phones in their pockets of their trousers or their purses, for example. We know that that's reduced sterility. Overall male sterility has dropped 25% in the UK. So that, and then the sickness that is going to arise, our health systems are just not capable of dealing even with the sickness from past exposures, let alone future exposures. When I started in diabetes research back in 1978, it was very infrequent. That the incidence of diabetes was very infrequent, but it's just gone straight up. From that time around the 60s and 70s to where we are now. And it's got so bad that the Rand Corporation did a study in the United States of US adults, and they found that 60% of US adults are taking prescription medicines for one or more conditions, and that 12.5% have five or more conditions. So this is a real problem facing us for the, now, but certainly in the future, in terms of just the health of the population. So Dr. Martin Paul raised the flag. A lot of people criticized him for doing that, but I support 100%. He is 100% correct that this could be a civilization-ending event.
And he's saying that based upon the scientific studies, not based upon some...
No, based upon the scientific knowledge, yeah. Because scientific knowledge comes from studies, as you would understand them, which are controlled studies where you have a group that's not exposed and a group that's exposed. You can't do them anymore because everybody is exposed to electrosmog. So you can't do a controlled study anymore. But that is what people think of when they think of studies. But you can also do it in other ways, by exposing individuals, by taking individuals away from the radiation and putting them in Faraday cage environments or remote environments. There are a lot of ways that you have to do the studies in order to get something that's scientifically reasonable and scientifically based, that's different from what you would think of as a study.
What sort of benefits can be gained by someone to mitigate or reduce the electromagnetic radiation within their own home?
They can try and keep it out of the home. You can use the graphite paint on all the external walls. You can use low energy glass that reflects out the radio frequency signals fairly well. You can use a metal roof, which is a big factor, big helping factor. But beyond that, there's not a lot you can do, and the signal will still creep through the cracks. Because the body is so exquisitely sensitive. As an individual who is electrosensitive, you can wear shielded clothing, which will give you some degree of protection, but nothing that can reverse this effect. It is just so profound, because when the molecules in our body become damaged, the body has to repair them. And the body repairs them on its own time frame. And that means it takes days.
This is why it feels so good to take a nature vacation, right? To get in the woods, whether it's on a daily basis for a little bit or just go off grid for a while. After a few days, you just start feeling better. So Trevor, thank you so much for joining us. What would you share in closing?
Everybody needs to go to their local council and find out what is the situation. Has the council allowed these new small cells to be built in residential areas? They must stop the small cells from being built in residential areas.
Excellent. Trevor, thank you so much, and we'll be chatting again shortly.
Okay. Thanks, Josh.